Imperfect leaders. Are you facing challenges filling open speech-language pathologist positions within your district? It's kind of a silly question because I know you are. Empath Speech understands the critical need for qualified professionals in your schools. They recognize that communication lies at the heart of academic success, and that's why they're dedicated to helping you bridge the gap by offering expert therapists and innovative telehealth solutions. Don't let open positions hinder your students' success. Partner with Empath Speech today and ensure every child in your district has access to the speech therapy they deserve. Empath Speech, EMPATSpeech.com. Empowering students, empowering schools. So I think it was like, I don't even know how many years ago it was that I learned about this book by Jessica Abel. It was called Out on the Wire, The Storytelling Secrets of the New Masters of Radio. And it's a graphic novel, and I used it as a way to really help craft my message as a superintendent. How I wanted to be able to tell the story of our district, what made us special, and then also our opportunities to improve. This, I mean, I must have read this. I'm holding it in my hand so you can hear it kind of like. Really loved it. I recommend it to anyone who is thinking about going into leadership as a way to really think about crafting their story. And so my guest today, James Sturm, he's the co-founder of the Center for Cartoon Studies. And so I thought it was totally appropriate to take Jessica Abel's book off of my bookshelf and really think through her lessons in storytelling, and then sort of putting that side by side with how James talks about leadership. And in the first part, he does that. He talks about the advice that he might give someone who is working to tell their story. And in the second part, we talk about a flood at his school and the impulse that leaders have, this sort of bias towards action, and whether or not, and I love this question that he asked, is being patient being passive? And he said something right at the end there. He talks about the idea that one's leadership style and the way that they lead in the first 10 years of their work, particularly when they're just starting out and they really sort of put together this really entrepreneurial approach to the leadership work that they do, and how that transitions as they are now in a different role, and how sometimes there is this tension that exists between the first years and then the subsequent years as you're settling in and leading. Really interesting conversation. Really thankful for the time that James gave me. I'm Peter Stiepelman, and this is An Imperfect Leader. Today on An Imperfect Leader, James Sturm is my guest. And James is a cartoonist and the co-founder of the Center for Cartoon Studies. He's the editor of the Center's graphic guide series, and his writings and illustrations, they've appeared in publications that include The Chronicle of Higher Education, Slate, Paris Review, The Onion, New York Times, and on the cover of The New Yorker. And James was the 2020-2021 Harvard Radcliffe Institute Fellow, and a 2008 and 2015 McDowell Colony Fellow. James leads an organization that thinks about the past, present, and potential. That is, I believe, something that all school leaders must do well. So James, welcome to An Imperfect Leader.
Thanks so much for having me on the pod.
I'm so happy to meet you and to have you here. You know, I saw on your website that you will be or will have been being part of a panel or giving a lecture at Skidmore College, and that is my alma mater. And they have the very best motto, I think, which is, I think, something you probably believe in, that creative thought matters. And having just finished rewatching Oppenheimer, having started the book that inspired it, American Prometheus, thinking about Art Spiegelman's Mouse, I really wish I could have been there or could be there to learn from you. But I would say that today we get to do that right here. So we get to listen and learn from you today. My regular listeners are likely wondering, like, how am I connecting a cartoonist to school leadership? And I know you also questioned that in an email exchange that we had, but I would say stick with me. I think one big role that a superintendent must take on is that of a storyteller. Cartoonists like Jessica Abel, she talks about how to craft a story in her book, Out on the Wire. And when I listened to your talk at Monadnock Summer Lyceum, I was really like struck by the project that you had done with veterans, and it prompted this probably simple question. And that's sort of like that superintendents, they have to build trust. They need trust to pass a tax increase or to convince a family to stick with their public school system. They need trust to influence policy development at the state and national level. They build trust by telling their district's story clearly and also, you know, creatively. And so what advice might you give someone who is working to tell their story, and maybe what's a process that they might consider using?
I certainly agree with you that storytelling is one of the most essential and powerful tools that we have to build trust and to win over hearts and minds. And when I'm making my own work, I am trying to kind of find some type of authentic voice. What comes to mind too is somebody who asked Zadie Smith, the novelist, during one of her meetings, like, how do you find your own voice? And her response was like, well, we'll maybe start by looking for other people's voices. And I think, you know, leaders, of course, have to be doing that. And
I mean, it's almost like as you're trying to become a better writer, you'd read a lot of people's work to try on different sort of ways of communicating.
That's interesting. Anyhow, sorry to interrupt. No, not at all. And I think sometimes it's easier to know what's not working than knowing what is working. And it often takes it's a bit of a process to find out what is working. And I think every leader and every leadership team, every school district, every organization is unique. So, you know, their process, their voice will be unique as well. But, you know, say if you are a school or school district and there's a program or an initiative that you want your school to talk, you know, you want to get it out there, it's been successful and you want to share that. Or perhaps it's aspirational. You want to be the poster child, say, for a program or initiative. Either way, you have to communicate that. So if you want to be the poster child, or you feel you are the poster child, well then you got to make the poster so people are aware of it. It's, you know, one thing to kind of write a play, perform in a play, but if nobody sees the play, well then, you know, that you got to close that loop. So when you're thinking about, you know, kind of making that poster, you know, what you're saying, like, you know, what you're trying to capture and get across is like, this is what this program looks like in our school, or this is our vision for it. And here's the picture that we can all see. As soon as you start doing that, you're designing, whether it's a poster or a newsletter, you're thinking about information hierarchy. You know, what's the most important thing a reader will notice when they see the missive? You know, what's the next thing that you want them to notice? This comes across a lot as a cartoonist in storytelling, where you're trying to tell a story and you're doing it panel by panel. And the first panel you want to establish, I don't know, there's a character, you know, asleep in their room. And, you know, you want to show someone, you know, under the cover sleeping. And if somehow you get caught up in the wallpaper or the quilt and the patterns, and you look at that panel and it takes you a little while before you see the kid sleeping in the bed, well, you're going to lose your reader. You have to, you know, you can have those things in the panel, but you have to make sure that the first thing they notice is kid sleeping in bed. So if you embed information into this visual architecture, you know, you'll communicate more effectively. And I think we all have to kind of learn to be visually literate as much as possible to be effective communicators today.
In my book and in the leadership model that I use to advise others, there's this dimension called the leader's learning work. And there's a term in there that is in that dimension, that is the power of language. And I was reading Watership Down, the graphic novel project that you completed with Joe Supfin, and I'm really tempted to expand that term now to include the visual as well. I mean, we make judgments about an organization from what they say and how they say it, and there really is judgment that is made, or we extract meaning based on sort of the visuals that we see as well. And so, you know, if you're receiving a newsletter that you send out quarterly to every family in the school district about what you've accomplished, and it is just all print, you lose such an opportunity to be able to express and show and to celebrate some of the amazing things that are happening if you're not also thinking of the visual piece there. And oh, absolutely. By the way, I would tell you, I did read, you know, the graphic novel that you worked on, and, you know, reading it as an adult, it's like I kept coming up with these metaphors for schools, like the rabbits, how they operate, how the, you know, themes of leadership and their teamwork and overcoming challenges. And they so absolutely mirror the dynamics found in educational institutions. So thank you for reintroducing me to such a really interesting
absolutely. Thing. I think somebody's has to kind of the leadership of Hazel Ra. I mean, that's got to be a book. And it's interesting, like even in that book, as I was kind of laying it out and thinking how to tell that story, a lot of, you know, Hazel kind of runs risks and is very brave. But I was just as interested in all the little quiet moments where he would sit with somebody who was injured or wait for somebody.
A lot of licking of wounds.
Yes. And lean in. And I always try to like kind of visually show him kind of connecting with somebody in very intimate ways and panning very close to that. Because I think that was one of, you know, his empathy was one of his great powers. And also just
that's so interesting because it's true in leadership as well. You get better and closer and clearer understanding of people and their positions the closer you get to them. And so when leaders, and I imagine you at your own institution, if you're making decisions up high without engaging those who are most impacted by a decision, often those decisions don't go so well. It's when you really engage with the people who are going to be impacted by that decision that new solutions sort of reveal themselves, and often people just feel better about the decisions being made.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One thing I just, before we get too far away from it, just circling back around when we talked about, you know, if a newsletter is just, it's just text and you lose an opportunity, I think also just the choice of images, you can lose opportunities. You know, if you're talking about how distinct your community is, let's say, and you kind of use clip art or you use, you know, some stock photo, you know, you might be saying one thing, but you're showing another. And even though it's not consciously registering, I think people absorb that and kind of understand that. I also think that like when you're communicating with somebody, I know when I'm, you know, picking up a graphic novel and I notice like, you know, they're using some really ratty font or things are pixelated or there's too many fonts or there's just, you know, just elements that aren't considered, I kind of lose a little faith in the authority of its author. And I think when you're communicating and it's well designed and there's interesting visuals and you're, you know, there's something that engages them right away, like that all you know, generates trust in your organization.
No, I agree with that. I mean, think about it. I mean, so in these newsletters, or they may be talking about, you know, their facility needs or their instructional practices or policy changes or academic issues or academic growth and all those kinds of things. And if you just had sort of an apple on a desk, right, you lose such an opportunity to be able to use these visuals in a more meaningful way, or just like, you know, a leaky pipe that is just dripping sort of suggests like you didn't really think very much about wanting to communicate this. You were just getting a job done. And so how do you really engage your people? I think it's like, how do you not appear to be cheap with just a cheap stock photo kind of thing? You know, like it suggests I didn't think very much about this.
Right. And this is the thing about also a lot of the pre-formatted communication tools. I mean, they serve a purpose, right? You don't have to reinvent the wheel and people's time is very precious. But if you can kind of create some type of unique way of communicating that, whether it's like a little, you know, every year at the Center for Cartoon Studies, we send out a little tiny comic book pamphlet, and it's kind of embedded in materials that we're sharing. But I think it's hard because I think a lot of times when the communication, it's like people think of it as a recap, right? Like, oh, we got to get this out. It's tomorrow, you know. So there's like, well, maybe one person writing it, or maybe a couple. Because when you're talking about, you know, communication and visual hierarchy and all those things, as soon as you start talking about hierarchy and what information you're privileging, you're also talking about equity, right? So when you have more voices and you have that discussion, I think something a little richer can come from that communication.
Well, you're giving me a thought in terms of how we started the conversation when I said you lead an organization that thinks about past, present, and potential. And what an opportunity, something as simple as a newsletter might be an opportunity to celebrate one's past, to consider what's happening right now, and then to lead with some of that aspirational piece, what is potentially possible for a community, particularly through an equity lens and those types of who has been historically underrepresented and on the sidelines looking in, and how do we do something as a community that brings us all together? So, you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does the term an imperfect leader resonate with you?
Our imperfections, our quirks, our irregularities are what define us. And imperfect leader is a term for resonates with me because it's owning that, right? I'm really suspicious of the word perfect. It's like the word pure. It exists only on some conceptual plane and not this earthly realm that we all have to live and work in. It's interesting, like people strive to be perfect or to keep improving at least, right? No one strives to be imperfect since that's our natural state. Any artist, anybody in the creative arts, you know, if they're seeking perfection, they will only go crazy or never make work to you.
And we'll be right back. Hey, district leaders, I know you already know this. In schools worldwide, cell phones are posing real challenges on student engagement and mental well-being. And I want you to meet Yonder, a proud sponsor of An Imperfect Leader. And let me share this story from a visit I made to some schools in Silicon Valley. I asked some kids what they liked about Yonder, and after some funny looks, they shared that actually, with Yonder, teachers don't have to battle with them over phones anymore. In fact, one kid said to me he didn't have to worry anymore about his parents texting him in class, and the kid next to him like sort of shoved him and goes, "Texting? My mom used to FaceTime me in class." I want to introduce you to a support system that increases teaching and learning. I want you to discover why a million students choose Yonder daily. Minimize distractions. Maximize learning potential. To learn more, go to overyonder.com. Y-O-N-D-R. We're back for segment two of An Imperfect Leader called Imperfect Leadership in After Action. My guest is James Sturm, and he is a cartoonist and the co-founder of the Center for Cartoon Studies. And in this segment, we ask our guests to deconstruct a decision that they had to make, and then we discuss it. So James, what happened?
Well, I'm going to take us back to 2011, and it was when Hurricane Irene hit Vermont. And we were 5 years old, the school, 6 years old, the school, and our library, the Schultz Library, was in the old firehouse, and it was right on the White River. And the water was rising, and it was the evening, and you know, our library is one of the most, you know, beloved parts of the school, just graphic novels and rare and out of print books and zines and mini comics. And the water was rising, and I went there to, you know, I ran over there to see if I could, you know, grab some stuff out before as the water was kind of like inching up. And the library was on the second floor of the building, and the first floor was already getting flooded. And as I ran over there, a whole bunch of students, our librarian, were showing up also with similar concern. And there was police there, and they're like, "You cannot go in this building. Get out of here." And it's like, "Oh, damn." And you know, we're all kind of heartbroken. Then I until the police, you know, moved, and then I doubled back, thinking I'd grab a couple bags of books. And like the rarest of the rare stuff that I felt were really irreplaceable. It didn't look so bad, you know. And then just as I was about to go in, a whole bunch of other CCS students showed up as well. The librarian, and were like, we had the same impulse, you know, like let's get some books. So we did kind of like a, you know, like a bucket brigade sort of thing, and we got a whole bunch of books out. And we were all very kind of felt very heroic, and we were all felt very proud. And then, you know, the adrenaline wore off, and I realized just like how bad a decision that really was, and the risk that I put people in. And I still think about that and shudder and feel like I dodged a bullet. So that was a leadership decision that in the moment kind of seemed like it worked out, but in reality, It was a big mistake. For me, at least, it really made me reflect on this model of leadership that really has a bias towards action and kind of how we see leaders in this kind of heroic mode, where really the most heroic thing I could have done is like really made sure everybody was going to be safe.
That's profound. Now, was this sort of at the beginning of your leadership journey in terms of taking over or establishing the school, or where were you in terms of how many years had you been in this role?
Yeah, you know, the school started in 2005. And the Center for Cartoon Studies is an MFA program, graduate students, and it's a really small school. I mean, somewhere between 30 and 40 students. It's a 2-year program. And we also have summer workshops for high school students and various things. But, you know, we co-founded it with myself and Michelle Ali in 2005. And, you know, I love reading like old how-to cartoon books, you know, from like the 20s, 30s, 40s. And I've probably read, you know, hundreds of those, but I don't think I read a book about leadership until, you know, a couple of years into kind of directing a school. So I had a lot of catching up to do. And I think this story is like one example of that.
Well, it's a great example because, as you noted, there is this sort of bias towards leaders that you're supposed to take these bold stances and take these dramatic action and somehow the music will swell and the, you know, and everyone is looking to you as you have, you know, rescued whatever it is, when so much of leadership is about certainly being decisive, but it's also being thoughtful and empathetic and compassionate and putting people first. And it sounds like you did some really interesting learning. I want to certainly review on that. One of our previous episodes early on in the podcast, Eric Knost talked about a flooded school and just the emotion that comes about seeing, whether it's a school or your library, your life's work, the people you care about, just as the water rises, and what that compels you to maybe do or to think. So it's certainly an interesting, I guess, situation to, or episode in one's life to revisit. So I appreciate you doing it. When you think about what got overlooked in this situation, you alluded to it, and I wonder if you could be more explicit. What got overlooked?
I got really, I mean, first and foremost, the safety of the people I was responsible for, right? You know, that water could have snapped a support in some other buildings on the river. That had happened, and somebody could have been inside that library and easily been swept down that the White River. So that was certainly first and foremost. You know, and it's funny because it would have been easy. I don't know. Like there was a moment where there was like this victory lap. Like, we saved the books, right? But, you know, there's not, I would have, you know, burned down the entire library if it meant saving, you know, one person from, you know, a catastrophic injury or something worse.
What did you learn about relationships, or what new relationships were formed as a result of this?
Well, I think I got swept up in the drama of the evening like everybody else. And I think it was really my responsibility to stand apart from that. And kind of take on that responsibility. And I should also add, like, if I recall correctly, some of them were out drinking that night. So there was like also this kind of like, they showed up and were like, we've got to save the library. And there was this real emotional appeal too. And I mean, I felt it too without drinking. And I'm sure they would too as well. But you know, you're stepping beyond being like, yeah, we got to do this. Like, I'm one of the cool kids with, you know, that's probably overstating it, but you know, you want to,
you're part of a movement, right? You get excited. Right.
Well, you just like the popular, I wanted to make the popular decision too. You know, I mean, that was probably another part of the thinking as well. Like, oh, I could be the heavy here and say, no, this is, you know, just like you would as a parent, you know, it's like, yeah.
Well, just like you would fun. As a superintendent, no doubt. There are times where you're like, we can do this. And because you want to make the popular decision, and looking back, you realize, if I could do it again, I might have done things differently.
Yeah. And yes, absolutely. And you know, what this whole thing all, you know, just kind of brings about is this thinking about, you know, what are our models of leadership, right? And I think, you know, sometimes we think that being patient is being passive, right? And that isn't always the case. And when you're patient, you know, you are just more likely to hear more voices and have more discussions. I also think, like, when you're thinking about leadership, sometimes, at least for me, what gets forgotten is this very essential thing is like, you are leading towards something, right? Like you are leading towards something. And I know like when I'm making comics, right? If I didn't have a lot of quiet, reflective time doing drafts, being by myself, taking walks in woods, and thinking about what this book's about, its themes, and I just started like drawing finished pages, I would be generating like, I'd be like using a lot of resources of my own time and energy, just going off in a direction that doesn't really make sense. And when you're when you're leading a big organization, you're marshaling even more resources and wasting people's times. So it really behooves a leader to have that quiet, or leadership teams have that quiet, reflective time to really say, okay, we've listened, we've talked, we've done some planning, and now it still may not work out, but at least you've done your due diligence.
In the end, what was something that was good that came out of this experience?
Well, in the end, it's just valuing those aspects of leadership, right? Like I feel like being quiet, being more patient, trying to be kind of more present, and realizing that good leadership isn't just like making a headline and having a big heroic act. It's just like the day-to-day interactions that you have. It doing all those little things, I feel, are so much more important than, you know, some kind of like having some kind of heroic moment, which usually might be flattering to you as an individual, but doesn't really create an environment or an institution that everybody's kind of, you know, sharing in the success or in feeling like ownership of.
What advice would you give to an aspiring leader?
I think, you know, at least for cartoonists, right? Like there's no one right way to be a great cartoonist, right? There's so many elements that you are bringing together to make your craft, right? You're learning to write, to draw, to design, to color. You're doing maybe journalism and research, or you're, you know, whatever your comic's about. And the hope is that is all in service of your narrative and your story. And you might not be so wonderful at this any one thing, but together it becomes greater than the sum of its parts, and it comes together and it kind of has a life of its own. And I would imagine that there's no one way to be a great leader. You know, there's so many skill sets as well that you have to kind of cultivate. And some might come easy, some might be more difficult. You know, I mean, for me, that patience part is really difficult, right? Like I have this entrepreneurial kind of energy. I started a school, and all these things that served me really well in an entrepreneurial mode in the first 10 years of the school really might not serve me so well in the second 10 years of the school.
I can't wait to talk about that in the intro at some point when I'm introducing this episode. I hadn't thought about the leadership qualities that one brings into the first period, in your case you said 10 years, and how that might need to change and develop into something different as you're now the custodian of the vision you worked so hard to establish, and that there are different leadership qualities that need to be highlighted, amplified, spotlighted, or whatever. That's a really interesting take on leadership.
But I want to say that is just like so 100% true. And just like when you're making a comic book, you're having a dialogue with this thing that you think you're generating and you're responsible for, but then it surprises you and has a life of its own, and then you're responding to it. And I feel like with the school, yes, you have a vision, and this is the model I'm making, and this is how I think it's going to be. And then, you know, you start bringing people on board, and then the students kind of start creating a culture, and the community starts, and it's not your place anymore. It's like you are just part of something, and you have to respect that. And if you don't respect that, you'll be diminished and the institution will be diminished.
My guest was James Sturm, and he's a cartoonist and the co-founder of the Center for Cartoon Studies. And James, thank you so much. First of all, thank you for helping us think about the power of the visual, looking at our past, consider its impact on our present, and then also then taking that next step and seeing this sort of this window into our potential. And then being really thoughtful about how patience really is a leadership quality. And many leaders, they have to resist the impulse to make a quick decision, and that great leadership can really come about when we've been thoughtful about the ramifications of any decision, but certainly the ability just to sit with a problem and allow us to then develop a solution towards that. So anyway, I really thank you so much for giving me your time.
Thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to kind of reflect on leadership and hopefully make me a better leader going forward, because I am certainly a poster child of an imperfect leader.
Ooh, I can't wait to see what that cartoon might look like. Music for An Imperfect Leader was written and arranged by Ian Varley. Sam Falbo created our artwork, a wood print-inspired Daruma doll butterfly. Remember, imperfect leadership is not a scarlet letter. It's a badge of honor. It recognizes that serving as a lead learner is about being a vulnerable leader, an empathetic leader, a compassionate leader. And I'm proud to be an imperfect leader. I'm Peter Stiepelman. Please join me next time for another episode of An Imperfect Leader. Leadership in After Action.